We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into a Thursday edition of the OBR Film Breakdown. We have Andrew Spade. We have myself. We're happy to be here. Hopefully, you're happy to be listening. We have a great podcast for you today. I'm excited to talk about a little bit of the trend line in research, analytics, and football, and social media. There's a whole thing going on here we want to hit on. And then we're going to talk about some 2025 first-round names that we are paying attention to early in the process. So that's fun because I don't know if you know this, guys. The Browns are back in the first round next year. We've been quiet about that, wink, wink, on this podcast. So we're excited to talk about those guys. Andrew Spade, what's up, man? Welcome in. How's your day going?
Pretty good. I know that I always or often like to kind of throw a little weather nuggets out there, but I know that you dealt with a little bit of stormy weather last night, and we've had some more today. We've got more on the way later this evening, so It's you know, it's that time of year, May, when you get these stormier periods, and it just kind of, yeah, it's I enjoy a thunderstorm, but it does kind of always put me a little bit on edge.
I do love a good thunderstorm. The front porch, like, feel the breeze coming in. Mm-hmm. I love that feeling. Wife hates it, kids hate it, but I'm into it, man. I'm into it. We around here, to update misfortune in my life, I had a mower, Andrew, that was down and out on my side, and we were borrowing our neighbors to get the grass. I was turning into a forest in the backyard, and broke that mower, hit a metal stake in the ground that our kid's swing is on, and broke that mower, and essentially just had to cough up $600 for a new mower. So it's not great. The vibes aren't good. You know, anytime you're forking out money for a new Cub Cadet that you're not even going to get to use. So we're not feeling great about it, but we did get our mower back functioning. But I could have probably waited a few more days maybe and just got our mower back instead of burning up someone else's mower. So we're $600 down today. We just put a big bet out there, maybe on the Pacers money line tonight is what I'm telling myself. And it's just that's how I'm sort of making myself feel better about losing that
money. Imagine if you bet $600 on the Pacers. Good Lord. I would be calling somebody and trying to get you help.
Well, you know, I feel like I need some help based on the situation with lawnmowers. Ready to move on from that. Anyway, so that's where we're at. We're gonna rally. We're gonna get positive. What we thought, as again, we are spending more time before the show talking about what we want to talk about than anything else because of the lack of I think the, you know, sort of content that we crave is not readily available right now. The Browns do get together with rookies this weekend for minicamp. We're excited to have that. The OBR will be there covering it, and we will have some stuff from that we want to cover with you. I think if you've been listening to recent shows, we thought the schedule would come out this week, but I thought it was a little too quiet in general for them to drop the schedule. It's like the NFL wasn't saying anything about it. It would be like the NFL loves to build up those moments. So it does make sense. That's a week out from the time you're listening to this. We'll get a feel for the schedule and do all that fun schedule game stuff. We don't have any clarity on that London game the way we maybe thought as some of these nuggets have been creeping out, but that's just part of the scheduled game wrinkle that's coming next week.
And I saw today Peter Schrager is doing a mock schedule.
Well, look at that.
So this is where, like, one of the running themes of this podcast between now and what, the end of July, will be how do you fill 3 months of you know, space with not much NFL news. And one person's solution to that is trying to predict what the schedule will be. Not the games, not the draft picks, not the trades, not the free agency. Just when, what, who will be playing each other when. That's what he has predicted.
Times are tough. Times are tough. I mean, I don't even know how you would go about doing such a thing. I have really no idea. I mean, it would be such a waste of time. No offense to Peter. You know, a couple years ago, met him at the draft. It was really nice. I thought,
yeah, a sweet spot for him. Seems like a very well connected guy. So I wonder if this is maybe his way of getting this information out there in a way that's not, he's not trying to blow the NFL's spot up. But he's trying to kind of say, you know, this is what I'm hearing without saying that. And he did, it's worth mentioning, have the Browns playing the Bengals on Christmas Day.
You're right. And the if you remember how these schedules, like the days leading up to it, there will be like, oh, week 8, the Browns play the Jaguars or whatever. Like there's just random weeks games that come out. So, maybe Schrager's onto something there. But I could not imagine performing that exercise. It would be just, again, an utter waste of time. But he is super connected, so maybe there's some nuggets.
Week 6,
right?
Browns at Steelers. I'm just throwing a dart. Week 6, Browns at Steelers. That's all.
I would love to open with a home game again. I'll say that. And if it was division based, like, okay, week 1, Browns Ravens. That's my call. Home game, Browns Ravens.
Like that would be. I would be very excited about that.
Me too. Just as excited as last year. Maybe it won't rain the whole time. Although that did work to the Browns' favor. Anyway, let's get on task. We want to hit on this idea that there seems to be a direct line into social media in a serious way these days. Like, I'm not saying that it's super trendy here, but I do think that the NFL and those around organizations, Andrew, are letting the opinion of people on Twitter show up in a meaningful way for their office. Like, the reason we say this is because Eric Eager, who works at Sumer Sports, he was their VP. They're hiring him in the Panthers are hiring him in an analytics role. And it feels like there was the Spielberger fellow from Pro Football Focus who did a great job predicting contracts, and he'll be starting. I think actually did start. He has a new job with a sports agency. I hope I got his last name right. But he started a new job with a sports agency, I think a representation agency. Like, these people who are really good at these things, and there are quite a few of them out there. I don't need to rattle all of them off, but there are people that are very good at the research. There are people very good at NFL trend lines for contracts. And obviously the big data bowl stuff that happens, the Browns are at the forefront of snatching guys up who do really solid work there. So it just feels like between some teams also recognizing more than ever the value of like trading down and using the trade charts and some of them following the consensus boards, that there is a, I don't know if the way to phrase it, Andrew, is that organizations are smarter than ever, but I think they're willing to look in places they never used to look and think in ways that even 10 years ago they weren't willing to think. And that's, it to me, is an encouraging part of how football's evolving in a good way, because I think the mesh of data and film and old school football and new school stuff is really the best way to go. Teams who lean too far one way or the other, I think, put themselves in jeopardy. But the ones who are finding the balance between those two, and there are really smart people doing some of this work on social media, and especially, you know, when Twitter was a better place, it's certainly gone downhill a little bit, but there are still some really talented ones. So I think this is a trend we're going to continue to see where, you know, the smart ones out there are getting grabbed up. And I even wouldn't be surprised if like a Nate Tice, I know Nate Tice just got a new opportunity at Yahoo and was doing a great pod with Robert Mazur at The Athletic. Like someone like that, who's breaking down scheme stuff at a high level, doesn't get some sort of like opportunity as well. I think that's something that could happen.
Agreed. Yeah. I think the interesting thing about this is with the analytics roles, I wonder what that looks like work culture wise for these guys. Like if you're working for Sumer Sports or PFF, something like that, you're probably, sometimes in the run up to free agency, you're grinding, putting in like a 60, 70 hour week. But I have to imagine for the most part, it's a pretty light haul, right? Like you're probably closer to like 30 to 35 than you are to 50 on an average week.
I agree.
During the season, obviously it kicks up and you're doing pods and video and, you know, content. But I comparing that to kind of the NFL grind, but I wonder for the front office guys, what that grind really looks like at the NFL level, right? Like, are those guys doing the coach's schedule of like the 16-hour days during the season, putting to, you know, tabulating data and working on new visualizations and these sorts of things? Or is it because it's data based and it's all kind of basically they've got once it's built, you've kind of got it built. I just wonder about that a little bit. I mean, you brought up Nate Tice. I think the thing there is he kind of knows that world, came from that world. And I think if you give up podcasting to go back to that, you know, you're probably going to be working about twice as hard,
right,
to be honest.
Right.
Whereas I wonder about that with the analytics guys a little bit, if it's maybe a little bit of an easier bar because you're not signing up for what the coach's life is, which is like 9 months out of the year, 6 months out of the year, whatever. You're not seeing your family that much because you are in the office all the time. So that's an interesting dimension of this whole thing to me, is I wonder how much that, and like Spielberger taking a job with an agency rather than an NFL team, still trading on his expertise, but in a different way that probably doesn't result in, like I say, a lot of late nights.
That's a great question to ask that I didn't even really think about. And plus, like, what's the security of an analytics department? Like, if Tepper gets really like annoyed, right, with the situation, is he firing those guys, or like, do they go when a staff goes? Like, that's something I've always been a little curious about, is how does the flow of hire fire work for some of those aren't immediately tied to a head coach or a GM, right? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah. About. Based on the way that David Tepper handled things with that restaurant in South Carolina that had that billboard out there about him, I would guess that everybody feels like they have a pretty short leash, yeah, right? I mean, Tepper is definitely in the Haslam seat right now in the NFL in terms of being the owner that people have the least respect for. So he's got to earn it. Then the only way you earn it is by figuring out the right guys and then sticking with them. And it takes a long time, as we know from bitter experience. So, I think that's a great question. That they did change general managers this offseason, right? They've got Dan Morgan, former linebacker, in there now.
Right.
And I think Tepper has always talked about wanting to have analytics, but certainly making this sort of high publicity hire lends some credibility to that in a way that maybe even somebody that has been doing good work for, say, the Ravens or the Browns or one of these other really respected analytical franchises doesn't move the needle as much, because nobody knows those guys' names in the same way. It's like hiring somebody from the media side is almost doing more for your organization's credibility, because if you're in football analytics, you know Eric Eager's name.
Yeah, the optics around that type of hire are good. And again, this kind of brings us back to the original point of using a social platform to put forth your best foot as an organization, to whether it's a feel-good hire. But I think we agree Eric's a talented guy. Like, and there are plenty of these guys out there. I'm going to be fascinated if that just becomes more popular than it is, but it's popping up more and more than I think any of us would have thought it was. But I think a recognition of, hey, these guys are really good at what they do and they can bring value to an organization. And I don't care if I'm the VP of a startup that's kicking butt. If an NFL team wants me to be around, hey, we're moving to Charlotte. I'm sorry, honey, but we're gonna take that opportunity. So, you know, that's how it goes.
It's an interesting question though, right? Because like, I mean, I hope my boss isn't listening. I don't work an 80-hour week, you know, like,
I hope not.
I would be excited, obviously, to have it's a once in a lifetime type opportunity, but just being real, right, as like guys that have lives and responsibilities outside of work, it would be such a massive shift to all of a sudden be kind of tied into an organization where the culture is that you work 60, 70, 80 hours a week. And I know that there's lots of people in other professions. It's not like football is the only job where this happens, right? There's lots of people listening to this that have those jobs. And it's very different. So I wonder how much that becomes a part of this, but I guess maybe I'm telling on myself a little bit if I'm mostly concerned about the workload.
No, again, these are questions that I would imagine Eric has, or you know, Brad has, or whoever is, when you're making these choices, you're leaving the security of something, and maybe not. I don't know. That's a huge question and gets really personal. But again, like an NFL team calling you, I don't care how high up you are in the media world or how high you up in the data world. You are, I mean, again, it's just the idea. I work for the Panthers or I work for the Browns. Yeah. Like that is, enticing thing to have.
Yeah. You know? NFL teams, my email is on my Twitter profile. Yes. Please feel free to reach out
to us. We're readily available. Until that happens, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back from break and have a fun conversation around first round picks. We'll be right back. The OBR is proudly sponsored by Game Time Ticket App. When you're buying those tickets and it's the last minute, you don't have to be stressed out. You can go to gametime.co or use the Game Time app to make those last minute ticket decisions in the best possible way, with a fast and easy way to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. The app does a fantastic job of finding opportunities near you for events, both, like I said, sports and otherwise. We have a comedy show that we found recently with the best price that we could possibly find using Game Time. Great seats. You can scout out the seats, have a great experience, and get the image of those seats all within the app or online, whatever you would like to do. So Game Time is the fast and easy place for those last-minute ticket deals. So take advantage, snag your tickets with Game Time, and avoid the stress. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the promo code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create that account, use the promo code OBR, get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last-minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day, and that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system. So guys, this is not meant to be super formal. We are not making big boards. We are not doing anything crazy here. If you come to this podcast for draft insight for a draft a full calendar year away, you're at the wrong place. There are people that specify in that, and we will get very specific being back in the first round game come the end of the year. If you paid attention all year, Andrew and I did an article combining our college football thoughts. We're both college football fans. You guys know about my dying passion for the college football video game coming back out soon. There will be content on that. Let me tell you right now, I know Andrew's rolling his eyes at me, but it's going to happen. I'm going to get him involved somehow, some way. And we're going to have some fun with that. But we're excited to just be involved in picking a premier player again. And what we wanted to do was throw out some names that you have our attention, is the way we're phrasing this. Like, you have our attention this college football season. And there's some good ones early, Andrew. I think we should dive right in. What do you think? Like wide receivers probably where we're leaning early, but there's premium positions to have some banter on, right?
Yeah, wide receivers at the top because of the Amari Cooper question, right? He is currently scheduled to be a free agent after this season. So even with the Jerry Jeudy extension, wide receiver probably, if Amari Cooper walks as a free agent next year, wide receiver is by far their biggest need going into next year. Now, I think you can make an argument that offensive tackle is up there because Jed Wills also will not be under contract and Jack Conklin's contract will be pretty movable at that point. So depending on how they play this out, there's a world where in the next 2 weeks, Jake, they extend Amari Cooper and all of a sudden, you know, and Jack Conklin retires and all of a sudden it's like offensive tackle is by far now their biggest need going into next year. So, right. Those are kind of 1A, 1B is how I would kind of term it.
I would too. And you look at the group, it's not as early. So much changes throughout the year. Early indications are it is not as strong a quarterback class or an offensive tackle class. Now, there are some good ones in the group, but not as like deep overall. Like, I don't think there are going to be 8 offensive tackles taken in the first round. I don't know if it was 8 in this past draft, but it was close. So let's just pull up Dane Brugler, who we, you know, mad respect for, pull up his 25 draft big board and talk about it. If you have a subscription over there and can read that, follow along with us. But we're just going to go through, like, looking at the first 25 names and the ones that pop out to us. I know in the pre-draft, we were talking about these two LSU offensive tackles, and it's like, so hold on a second here. LSU has the number one player on the board for Dane, which is Will Campbell. And then they have this other one, Emory Jones, who he has as his 19th best player. So you're telling me they had Malik Nabers, they had Brian Thomas, which is what? That's the 17th pick, the 6th pick, the 2nd overall selection, and 2 offensive tackles playing last year who are trending to be Emory Jones tape, like that guy's going to be a top 15 pick. There's not a doubt in my mind. You're talking about 2 top 15. And they went like 10-3. And the Harold Perkins kid is an unbelievable defensive player. I know he'd kind of been in between positions. He had a ridiculous freshman year. They moved him off ball. I couldn't see a bigger Brian Kelly indictment is my point here. Like the LSU.
Hey, you know how I feel about Brian Kelly.
That is a mutual feeling here. Like the LSU ridiculousness of the Joe Burrow group. It's like, oh, they won a title. They dominated everybody. And it's like, oh, they have a pretty similar draft talent here. We'll see if, you know, we got to see if Brian Thomas is anywhere near Justin Jefferson or Nabers has to prove he's the Jamar Chase, but like at the NFL level, but the talent coming out is, it's pretty similar, man. So that's just a jarring thing as I look at the top, because like Will Campbell's at the top of that board. And then there's another tackle, Kelvin Banks from Texas. So 2 top 5 tackle prospects early before the season starts here. Those, I don't think we think the Browns are going to be in range for those guys, but you always sort of rattle them off. The other thing that catches my eye, Andrew, as I'm looking at these 25 is Michigan. The 2nd and 3rd prospects on the board here are Mason Graham and Will Johnson. Mason Graham, a defensive tackle. Will Johnson, a corner for them. You also have Colston Loveland. Their tight end is his 18th prospect. And then there's another defensive tackle whose name is kind of escaping me right this moment, who a lot of other people think is a top of the draft type of defensive tackle for Michigan as well. Like I guess I had presumed in my mind that Michigan lost a lot of talent. They did. They got a lot of guys drafted, but it's clear that this group is reloaded in a pretty serious way, or they just were deep beyond the, and it's Kenneth Grant is the other defensive tackle that they bring to the fold, but you know, they're going to be pretty good again. And you know, I don't think the Browns mentioned Will Johnson, but like the Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant defensive tackles, they would take a guy there early again if they loved him and the board fell that way. I think, do you think they'd be D tackle interested in the mid 20s or something?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in a position where after next year, Dalvin Tomlinson's contract is movable. So you could potentially need another starting defensive tackle. If you, in a world where the Browns have, say, the 5th best offense, Deshaun Watson becomes everything he was previously, and all of a sudden your offense is cooking with gas. Mm-hmm. In that world, it makes sense to invest that first round pick on the defense because you kind of have everything you need on the offense, and you believe that Watson will continue to elevate everybody around him. So there's absolutely a world where you could see them stocking up on the defensive line. Jim Schwartz loves it, right? And just keep feeding that pass rush.
So as far as edge rushers go, it's a little slim. Another one I want to reference to people, I think he led all of college football, or close. Maybe it was just defense tackles, but he was like 50 pressures. Deion Walker, his defensive tackle from Kentucky. If you can look up his tape from last year, he's fun. He is like huge and can really move, man. Like he is a very impressive player. Dane has him eighth. The two controversial players, I think, in the top 10 here is Travis Hunter. What is he? Great football player, but is he a corner? Is he a wide receiver? I know you watched Colorado a little bit last year, Andrew. Which one do you think he is? Because Eileen, he's a corner. Dane Lissom is a corner.
Definitely he's a corner. I think that's, especially at the NFL level, like he's an okay wide receiver, but he's a really good cornerback. And his ball skills then translate, of course. And so that, I mean, it's crazy that he's playing for Deion, right? Because that's the natural comparison that everybody's going to want to make. Because when you have a real true athlete at cornerback that can use their ball skills in that way, it all of a sudden the production, the interceptions, the tip passes, the contesting every ball at the catch point, just because you're a natural receiver,
right?
It becomes a whole different thing. I think there's a chance if he continues to develop. I think so much. There's so many questions about like what that Colorado environment looks like this year. But if he continues to develop, I think there's a chance that he could be like the next guy at corner in the NFL.
Yeah, and he's up there. Like I said, the only other corner I see in the top, 18 prospects, I guess I could scroll down a little bit. There is Denzel Burke, the Ohio State corner. He has down at 22nd, a slew of Ohio State guys down there at the bottom of the top 25. But it's the Will Johnson kid from Michigan who can play. Locked up pretty much everybody this year, this past year, except for Marvin Harrison, but that's a different thing entirely. Where we start to get really interested is this is James Pierce, this edge from Tennessee, premier position. Browns could be looking at that. I don't think his body type is a little slender, is going to be one that puts him inside the top 10 as like a lock. So I do think that's a name you should know. Tennessee kid, again, James Pierce, good speed rush skills, is one of the better overall pass rushers in the SEC last year. But then I think, Andrew, where it gets real fun is our boy from Arizona. This is where our eyes are early. Now, you listen to different broadcasts, you're going to get different things here. We got one that was just Tet McMillan. We got somebody calling him T-Mac. Andrew, you're saying it's give it to me. I don't know. I don't want to screw it up. I think you pronunciate this one a little better than I do.
I think it's Tetaroa.
Okay.
Tetaroa. Yeah.
We'll go with that. I like it. He is a fun player in a fun offense. He's probably going to be a little out of range early. Who knows? It's hard with these things.
Yeah. He feels like as of now, a certain top 10 pick.
A very long, slender body type, like fun after the catch, can run. The route running is clean and he can play in the slot. They had no problem putting him there with that young quarterback, Noah Fifita, who's really fun there. What that program looks like without Jed Fish, who is, I think he took over Washington, if I remember correctly, and a little bit of the financial trouble that's going on at Arizona as we were doing some pre-show research. How that team fares this year will be a little fascinating, but he is like the guy. But again, I think we're operating under the idea the Browns are picking anywhere 18 to 20 something, or hell, they're picking last in the first round if we want to get real fun. And then it's a little hard to imagine he's around. But other wide receivers, I mean, Luther Burden, I turned on the tape for Miles Harden, and he's good. He's a really fun wide receiver option. Luther Burden from Missouri, if you get a chance to watch him. And then you start to look at others in the top 25. There's only really one more, Andrew, and that's Emeka Egbuka from Ohio State, who has been overshadowed by, some significant wide receiver talent. And again, they bring in Jeremiah Smith, who's a young stud this year. He's going to play as a true freshman. They like another opportunity will be out there for some guys to shine around him again. And it doesn't slow down. They have another 5-star coming in, just didn't get here in the spring. So like, it's a challenge. And like the Carnell Tates of the world, there's going to be guys that try to get some opportunity. But if you saw his catch in the spring game, a little like turnover, one hand catch on the sideline. He reaches up and goes to get it. He is fun too. And again, a massive recruit. I think he was the number one receiver in his class when he came out, and all of that stuff checks out. I like it. I mean, I know you haven't maybe consumed a ton of Ohio State games, Andrew. Maybe you've been forced to over the time period. But
yeah, no, I watch the Big Ten. I know what's going on down there.
Yeah, do you enjoy him, or like have you not?
I think at this point you feel like they've got a really strong track record of developing wide receivers, and you know we know the story behind that. Anybody that's an Ohioan knows what Brian Hartline has done there. So you get excited about any of these guys at this point, I think. And the Browns are not, if things go the way that everybody's hoping that they will for the Browns this year, they are not going to be in position to draft like a true blue chip top of the draft guy.
Right.
It's just not in the cards for them, because you're hoping they're picking, I mean, you said 32, but you're certainly hoping that they're picking in the mid to late 20s. If they're in the teens, we're having a different conversation, I think, to be perfectly frank. Like, that's how high the expectations are and should be for where this team is going this year. So then it becomes a question of which guy kind of falls. This year, Brian Thomas was the guy, got picked at the pick that the Browns would have had.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, so that kind of gives you an idea. Now, Thomas is a player who was seen as a clear step down from the top three guys in this class, and I think it will be a similar situation next year. I could even see a world, Jake, where McMillan, Burden, and Ibuka are all top 10 to top 15-ish guys, and the Browns are kind of looking for who's the next guy, who's the best of the rest, and that's where they end up having to go. But that's where, again, then that conversation switches to, well, is there a tackle that they really love that actually is ranked higher than whoever the fourth best wide receiver is? And then that's where you get in that situation of having to decide positional value versus how you grade the prospects and where you see the team going. So obviously early, the expectation is wide receiver, but as I said at the top, you can see different ways that this plays out. But yeah, I like Ibuka. I like McMillan. I like Burden. I like the whole crew.
About Ibuka, do you think if he came out this year, he would have been a first round guy? Cause I think he would have at the end of the first round.
I do. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of talk about how many of those guys could creep in. And, you know, obviously Keon Coleman goes at the top of the second, Ladd McConkey right after. Those guys aren't technically first rounders, but functionally the all of the best wide receivers were off the board before pick 40. That's how it ended up playing out this year.
Right.
That's what I see being the new standard. Whether or not they're first rounders, they're top 40-ish players. If they're still on the board at the beginning of day two, they're getting gobbled up right away, because teams know that there's a lot of these guys, and it makes sense to make that investment, because you're getting 4 years. If you're in the second round, you're getting 4 years, in the first round, five, of a cheap wide receiver. And when Justin Jefferson signs that contract and gets paid, what, $35, $36 million a year?
Yeah.
The wide receiver world changes forever.
So others inside the database here, wide receiver, after we move past Ibuka, you're talking about 26 is Evan Stewart. So that's an Oregon kid. I don't think there's been a lot of hype around Evan. I think actually, if I'm correct, he transferred in from Texas A&M. That's right. So he left Texas A&M, went to Oregon this offseason. I have seen some clips that are promising that you know, show a player that's pretty good. And I don't think Texas A&M's offense has been anything stellar over recent seasons. He's had a couple seasons like 649 his freshman year, and then 514 last year, 8-10 games. So he would have to prove more, but I think there's a lot of bank on upside there. So that's a name to know and a team to know, Evan Stewart at Oregon. And then you kind of are scrolling a little bit. It's not nearly as deep a wide receiver class as we have seen in recent years. Like the furthest I go down, Andrew, from Stewart at 26 is Trey Harris at Ole Miss at 55. So like, this is an example of why we were calling this last draft so special at wide receiver. And Torrey Horton, again, that's going to be the second round range guys. If you recall watching that wild Colorado State, Colorado game, Torrey Horton was
horrible. I'm a big fan of his, not just because of that game, but his overall play style. And I didn't watch a ton of Colorado State, but he's one of those guys that moves different, man. Yeah,
he's a good player. I think he could rise.
I think he might be a first rounder.
Yeah, there's always these guys that shoot up the board. He's definitely one to keep your eye on. And then we should just hit on quarterback on the way out. Like an example of,
why would we do that, Jake?
We do have to say that if things go off the rails, the Browns could look at Like, if, again, if Watson gets hurt again or he plays poorly and they're in a top 10 scenario, if they love a quarterback, they should be interested in trying to do that if that's the route they like to go.
Right.
The problem is, early in this process, it's not a great class. Like, there's always one rising player that always, you know, comes out of nowhere. Jaden Daniels was a little bit of that last year, but there is no, like, going into this year, it's like, oh, Caleb Williams and Drake May, those are the guys, man. Like, you got to find a way to get in the spot to take one of those guys. I mean, Carson Beck is pretty well reviewed. He's fourth on the consensus big board that they put out. I don't know if he is. So he is 10th on Dane's big board. So he is like the early number one pick favorite. Then you're talking about Shedeur Sanders. You know, there's really good film for him. There's some concerning spots on film. And then there's the ever-growing presence of the noise around him, and that's something you can't ignore, especially if a franchise is committing something very serious to that player.
Probably the most divisive player since Johnny Manziel, I would say.
It will get that way, and it'll get bigger in this upcoming season. Then Quinn Ewers, who is, again, Texas's quarterback, who I've just sort of found myself underwhelmed by. Maybe he has a great year. Maybe he has a great year. And I actually did miss a wide receiver. I apologize, guys. It is Isaiah Bond at Texas. He is number 29.
Oh, yeah, he's fun,
too. He is fun. So that's apologies for that. That's another name to know. So you're talking about Ewers, and then you're down to, like, Jalen Milroe, Alabama.
That's the guy.
Yeah, so
that's the guy.
He's got to keep growing as a passer, and I think DeBoer will help.
That's it. Right? That's the argument, is that what DeBoer did for Michael Penix, he can do a crash course style for Milroe, and I think that just in terms of the athleticism, we saw, like, I mean, Jaden Daniels is the sort of blueprint for what game-changing athleticism now can do for you in terms of your NFL prospects. Mm-hmm. It used to be the teams were essentially unmoved by that, right? I mean, Lamar Jackson went 32nd, and he was absolutely in that realm of player where he would just take over a game with his ability. Now those players are going at the top of the draft. And so I think Milroe, to me, is the strongest argument for a player who is not regarded that highly now, but that's only because people haven't seen what he's going to be able to do with DeBoer's offense, which I think is going to accentuate his strengths, and then he's going to develop. I have a sneaking suspicion that he ends up being right there with Carson Beck as a sort of 1-2 for the first overall pick.
That's always, again, we said it a minute ago, and that's well said by you. That is the fact that every year a guy shoots up the board, they have a great season, and it's like, I don't think that you're doing this whole...
It kind of has to happen.
Yeah, you're doing the lead up to the draft, the offseason. This guy, you know, picking apart his 23 tape and then his 24 tape is really good, and it's just every year it's the same thing. And, you know, again, after that, you're talking like Jackson Dart at 48 here, Mississippi's quarterback, littered with inconsistency, and then I think the next two are Cam Ward. He's been around a little. I think Cam Ward went to, like, Washington State for a minute. Now
he's he was at Washington
State. He was somewhere before that in that really fun offense. I cannot remember where he was before he got to Washington State. Somebody out there is laughing at me. I don't either. So take it easy on us. And then 60 is Drew Aller, the Penn State kid. Like, he could rise if he has a better year. You know, it's just the processing and stuff wasn't great. It's got to get better. So, yeah, it's early. It's hard. Like, I don't like doing the definitive statement, this class stinks at these things. We'll see if they have a couple wide receivers rise late, but you're talking about, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 here in the early prediction for the first round quarterback. Just one quarterback, two Shedeur Sanders, I should say. There's two quarterbacks inside early, and then Milroe's kind of hanging around 32, 33. So, yeah, let's see how it goes, man. Should be a fun season. It's just fun to talk about these names, and we wanted to put some of them out there early on that we'll be watching. You got our attention.
Cam Ward started incarnate word.
You know, you're going to call me crazy. I was going to say that, but in my mind it sounded so dumb that I didn't want to out loud say it. So there you go. They were running like a really fun offense, if I recall, that he put up some really gaudy numbers. And
His second season there, they were 10-3. He threw for 4,600 yards.
That's spicy.
47 touchdowns and 10 interceptions.
That is spicy.
He did not run that much. I know sacks come out of it in the NCAA, but he did not run 74 attempts, so not that much running. He was more effective, a little bit more effective with his legs with Washington State, but still not not as I remember him as being more mobile than what I'm seeing here in his statistics. But
it'd be interesting to see, because Miami's put together a fun group. They'll be a team to pay attention to this year for sure. So, all right, that's a wrap. Hopefully you guys enjoyed today's podcast. Continue to rate and review. We appreciate you very much stopping by, listening to this wherever the podcast finds you. We will continue to do some stuff over the next few days, trying to have a little fun, maybe looking at Andrew Berry's draft classes when he was without a first round pick, how those have shaped sort of how our perception is of those classes. We'll see. Andrew and I coming up with topics nonstop. It's fun, and hopefully you guys are enjoying it too. So like I said, thanks for being here, hanging out with us. Have a fantastic Thursday. Be well. Go Browns.